You are listening to 89.1 WEMU, and this is Issues of the Environment. I'm David Fair, and today we're going to talk about bats. Much has been made of the colony collapse and decimation of our bee population. It has a tremendous ecological impact, as you might imagine. There's been much less conversation about an affliction that is killing off our bats and what the implications that may have for us. My guest this morning is a renowned bat expert and professor of biology at Eastern Michigan University, Dr. Alan Curta. Thank you for joining us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, what we're talking about is called white nose syndrome, and it is an affliction which could render some species of bats extinct. Let's start here and kind of revisit the subject matter. What exactly is white nose syndrome?
Well, this is a fungal disease that attacks the skin of the bats. And so one of the symptoms of this white nose syndrome is that you do get a white fluffy growth on bare skin of the animals. And when they're hanging in hibernation, one of the easiest places of bare skin to see on the bat is its snout. And so you have this white fuzzy growth, and that's where the name comes, white nose syndrome. But it does attack all bare skin, including their wings, their toes, their ears, etc.
And as a scientist, when you walk into a cave and you see that, you recognize it as a death sentence, don't you?
It is possible that the bat may survive the winter, but many of them are not going to survive.
Where does this fungus come from? Is it natural to our environment here in Michigan and in North America?
No, it's introduced from Europe. We're fairly certain, based upon genetics, that it did come from Europe. It was first found in a commercial cave, a cave that gives tours, in the state of New York near Albany in 2006.
Is there no fungicide that might kill off this fungus as it grows in caves and on the bats themselves?
Well, you have three or four different avenues that people are working on to try to solve this problem. One of them is the idea that you can put a fungicide on it or some chemical that is going to either inhibit the growth of the fungus or to kill that fungus. One of the major problems, though, with that approach is that you have to capture hundreds of thousands of tiny little animals and apply this.
Who don't want to be captured.
Of course.
Are humans helping spread this disease, much like we unwittingly carry the emerald ash borer and other invasive species place to place?
Yes, more than likely. The fungus has made some rapid jumps as it has spread across the continent. So much of the fungus is spread from bat to bat, and you can see that how it spread from New York down the Appalachians. It was just going from cave to cave as the bats carried it. But sometimes it made thousand-mile jumps, and recently in March it went from, I think the farthest west that it was the state of Minnesota, and then all of a sudden we had it in the state of Washington. And from there it's likely to spread everywhere on the continent.
You are listening to Issues of the Environment on 89.1 WEMU, and our guest is Dr. Alan Curta. Dr. Curta is a bat expert and biology professor at Eastern Michigan University. We're talking about an insidious affliction that is decimating bat populations. It's called white nose syndrome and stems from a fungus, and it's spreading through larger and larger portions of the continent. Well, Dr. Curta, how many species of bats do we have in Michigan? Nine?
There's nine species. Very good.
How many are prone to this fungus and to this affliction?
Well, there are five that are being affected by it. These are the species that remain in the state for the winter, and they hibernate underground in a mine or a cave. And the other species are highly migratory, and they're going to fly to Kentucky or farther south for the winter.
So they have a much better chance of avoiding it.
They have a much better chance. One of the features of this fungus is that it only grows on cold skin. So it has to be less than 68 degrees Fahrenheit, which is why when a bat is hibernating at 42 or 45 degrees, its skin is perfect for the growth of that fungus. But these other bats migrate much farther south. They arouse periodically. They forage. They're not in hibernation as much, and they have an opportunity to replenish some of the fat that is being used up. Our bats are affected by this fungus in a myriad of ways, but one of the most crucial is that they arouse from hibernation twice as frequently throughout the winter. They're starving to death, so they're losing all of the fat that they have on them by December, January, or February, and then many of them just leave hoping to find some food. But, I mean, I have photographs of these bats silhouetted against a blue sky and 3 feet of snow. They're just flying out into the landscape and dying because there is no food out there in February.
And you're talking about outside the caves. You also spend a lot of time going into these caves and exploring bat populations, and some of what you have found has been rather horrific.
Well, yes. So some of the sites that we've been in recently are in the middle of the infection. And so you see strange behavior. That's part of the syndrome. The bats will roost in very large numbers near the entrance where it's cold. That's not normal for them. You can go in and you can find dead bats on the ground, dead bats on the wall.
And you're not just talking about a couple of them.
No, you're talking thousands.
What populations of our bat species are most at risk, and will any of them go extinct?
Most of the bats that hibernate in our mines and caves are little brown bats and northern long-eared bats. I suspect that the northern long-eared bat will go extinct eventually. It was 10% of our population in the mines before white nose syndrome. It's now 2%, and I expect that to go down even further. Little brown bats are 90%. They will decrease greatly in population, but we suspect that they might stabilize at very low numbers.
You are listening to 89.1 WEMU, and Issues of the Environment continues with Dr. Alan Curta. Dr. Curta is a biology professor at Eastern Michigan University and renowned bat expert. What is the ecological impact of losing bat species? Does it go beyond insect control?
Bats, to me, you know, are really neat creatures, and I think we want to keep them on this earth just because they are so fascinating. In Michigan, in all of the north, bats are the primary predators of nocturnal insects. They eat many crop pests, and they will eat other insects, a few mosquitoes and other things that might transmit diseases. Overall, we don't know what the impact is going to be of losing this large, large number of predators on those insects.
Typically, when we talk about ecological damage, we then go to the next step, which is economic damage. Is there any known economic damage to be had with the loss of bat species?
Well, we suspect that there will be, because you can document what the economic impact is of bats for agriculture in the United States and in Michigan. You know, these bats are eating crop pests, things like the corn rootworm and spotted cucumber beetles. These things are really some of the most serious pests of corn and soy, which are the major crops in the state of Michigan. So losing them will have an economic impact.
Is there a federal or state action aimed at better protecting the bats?
Well, the Fish and Wildlife Service has organized biologists across the continent and is funding a fair amount of research on ways in which we might lessen the impact of this.
Are any of the species been declared endangered or threatened?
Well, some of the bats already were endangered, like the Indiana bat, but specifically because of this disease, the northern long-eared bat has been declared threatened by the Fish and Wildlife Service in the United States, and it currently is considering two or three other species for addition to the list.
Is that classification, in your estimation, enough?
No, it's not enough. You need some research on how to combat this fungus, and just labeling an animal as endangered is not going to be sufficient.
Even if labeled endangered, you still suspect at least one species is going to go extinct.
Yes, I think the northern long-eared bat probably will.
What can we do as lay people sitting out here wondering?
Well, one thing is not to go into the hibernacula during the wintertime, because that disturbs the bats and they use up even more fat because of that disturbance. Same thing in the summertime. If you have a colony of bats in your barn, just leave them alone in the summertime so that the moms can reproduce and hopefully produce some babies that are going to live a long period of time. People could put up bat houses if they want, but another thing that you can do is contribute to the research on this fungus. And organizations like Bat Conservation International out of Austin, Texas, they fund a lot of research on this disease. And it is a nonprofit organization, so it's a good place to contribute your money.
I know you're planning on doing more research trips. What do you hope to find and what do you expect to find? And are those different?
Well, sure. What I would hope to find is an increase in the populations, but in reality, it's probably going to be pretty bleak this winter. Based on the surveys last year, my best guess is that our population is down 43%. That means somewhere between 100 and 120,000 dead animals. That was last year, and I expect it to be worse this year.
Dr. Curta, thank you for your time. I certainly appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
That is Dr. Alan Curta, a bat expert and professor of biology at Eastern Michigan University. I'm David Fair, and you've been listening to Issues of the Environment. It's a weekly feature produced in partnership with the Washtenaw County Environmental Health Division and heard each Wednesday exclusively on 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.